head coach of the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, Jeff Ross. Today I'm with Matt Jones, Kevin Harnett, Pat Forty. I'm with Anoush Sariot, Kristen Wall, United States Congressman John Yarman, Sarah Bohanter, and
welcome to the Rusty Satellite Show with your host, Rick Redding. The show airs every week exclusively here on the Louisville.am Podcast Network. Rick's ready to start ranting and raving about his hometown right now. So here's Rick.
And this is the Rusty Satellite Show, the home of the most interesting people in the Ville. This is your host, Rick Redding, signing in with you for the 196th consecutive week. We are planning a 200-show celebration shortly after the Derby. The Derby! It's Derby season! I'm very excited about that. It's come up, and in fact, my first guest this week is a Derby-related guest, the first of several I'm sure we're going to have. Jessica Hines is a millennial, and she works at Yum Brands. And she is has been. I learned some new terms with her. She was voluntold. She told me to be on the committee for the Hats for Hope event, which is a fundraiser for Cozair Charities. It's a very exciting event, and it's a good place to go get your Derby hat. It's coming up April 20th at out in J-Town at the. At the Ramada Convention Center out there. So urge you to take a listen to Jessica and hear some other interesting stuff we talked about on the show. So and then the second half of the show, I'm very excited to tell you that Steve Weiser is on the show, a rare second appearance by a guest. But Steve is giving a talk about missing opportunities in Louisville. And no one knows more about local architecture than Steve Weiser. He is one of just five architectural fellows. He'll tell you in the interview what all that means. But he is in rare air among architects and has written several books about architecture in Louisville. And I'm just interested, and I think you will be, in his take on some of the things that have happened in Louisville's architectural history, and including some current projects, like what would have happened if Museum Plaza had been built, if you can remember that project. Or we also talk about the fate of the Louisville Gardens over there, and what's going to happen there. There is some movement, he says. There is some movement on that. So anyway, that's what's coming up in the show. First off, I want to give a big shout out to my sponsors. As you know, the show is brought to you by the Passport Health Plan. Those folks are very nice and have sponsored this show for a long time. And by the Eye Care Institute. It's your one-stop shop for eye care, whether you have routine vision needs or you need significant corrections such as LASIK. Eye Care Institute is the place you want to go. They're at 58. You can call them at 502-589-1500, make an appointment, or you can just go down there and in Butchertown at 1536 Story Avenue, right down there at the bottom of the exit ramp on Story. Great folks over there. Really enjoyed that. And my dentist is also a sponsor. More Smiles, Dr. Sean Moore. There you have a motto, great smiles, better health. Get in touch with More Smiles. They're at the corner of Stony Brook and Taylorsville Road. Okay, so I got a lot of stuff to get to today, and look forward to talking with you about it. I hope you'll stay tuned. First up, we're going to have our interview with Jessica Hines and talk about a bunch of millennial type stuff, I guess. And I think you're really going to enjoy the interview. And check out the picture of Jessica with her with some of the hats that are going to be for sale over at the Hats for Hope event. And after that, I'll be back to talk to you some more on the Rusty Satellite Show.
I had no use for health insurance, but my mom was always saying, sign up for Passport. And I was like, Mom. She was like, for my peace of mind. It got to be where I needed peace of mind, so I did. Now my mom, she can chill, and I feel pretty good about it too.
Together we can all feel better. Call 1-800-578-0603 and ask for Passport. That's 1-800-578-0603. Passport Health Plan, working together for a healthier Kentucky.
And today I am at the Cozair Charities office. It's a beautiful day. I'm with Jessica Hines, and I just learned a new term. Thanks to you, Jessica.
Louisville boomerang is
a
the
boomerang.
Term I think that you're searching for. Yes.
Yeah.
The term that is used when someone was born and raised in Louisville, tried to break out of the bubble and move away somewhere else, but ultimately ends back up in Louisville.
Right, right. Well, I did that a long time ago. But you said I'm too old to use the term, right?
Rick, I think that Louisville boomerang, it's super popular among like millennials or Gen Xers, so we may come at you if you try to take that word captive.
Well, yeah, I understand. My kids have always told me I wasn't cool, so I'm not going to try to start now.
But anyway, we're here with you, Jessica, because you have a very important project you're working on.
Yes, I do.
That.
So I am on the board for Hats for Hope, which is an annual event before the Derby. It's a silent auction where we auction off new designer and gently used Derby hats in order to collect the proceeds and give them to Cozair Charities.
Okay. Well, I understand it raised something like $60,000 last year. Is that right?
So last year was actually, we were right around $43,000. The year before, in 2015, we did reach over $60,000. But this year, you know, we're coming in real hot. We're really hoping for a great turnout, and we hope to surpass last year and potentially surpass 2015 as well.
Okay. Well, you're really young. Do you go to the Derby?
So I started going to the Derby probably when I was in high school. Infield tickets, of course, because that's where all the underage drinking took place. And so recently, I haven't been going just because I feel like as a native, I feel fine watching it on TV. I feel like I won't go back to the Derby until I have those really nice, like, $2,000 box seats.
Yeah,
I live to dream for that. so I may not ever go back to the Derby.
Well, this year you'll have a hat, right?
Yes,
I
will.
Have you picked one out from the collection of hats? How many are there?
So I think this year we have a collection of over 400 hats. So we have a very, very big pick of the litter. I know last year I bought two hats. I got to wear one in the comfort of my home for the Derby party that we threw last year. So I did not wear it to the Derby. But this year I'm hoping that, you know, the week before Derby, as all the festivities are happening, I can get out to at least some of those events and show off my Derby flair.
Wow. Well, we'll hope to see you out there. Now, I understand one of the cool things about this event is all the hats are donated, right? And you set up and collect them the day after the Derby, right?
Yes, we do. We put out collection boxes the day after the Derby. And a lot of them are, you know, they're not previously used Derby hats. We have some designers that will actually donate hats for the purpose of, you know, getting their name out there. So we have a lot of really generous designers who are willing to donate some of their new hats for the purpose of our event.
But you also get like these women that come in from California and don't want to take their hats back. I guess they can donate right
yes.
on the scene.
Yes, absolutely. And I know the chair of our board was recently telling a story about an estate sale that she had gone to, and this woman had closets and closets of hats, and she said like this woman's home alone probably had north of 200 hats.
Wow.
So you know, from that we picked a few that we thought would work, some that were not as old or as worn, and so we were able to pick through those as well.
Okay. So you're doing this. This is your volunteer. You said another new term that I learned from you. You got voluntold.
Yes.
That you would do this, right?
So it sounds very negative, but in the end, it is not. So I got involved with this board because my mother was actually on the board, and her company has been a sponsor for several years, and she's very, very active with the event. So
well, you can probably say what the company is.
It's AccuServe lighting equipment. They're a sponsor this year as well. So she got me involved in this because the marketing chair from last year moved on to a different city to pursue other opportunities, and the board was left without anyone to do marketing. So my mom thought that with my background.
Just the person,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And so it was more of like, oh, Jessica, I actually told someone that you would do this, as opposed to, hey, Jess, would you be interested in this? but it all worked out really, really well.
Here's when the first meeting is. Show up.
Right, exactly. So it all worked out really well. It's been a great experience being on the board and getting active with this and really feeling like I'm making a difference with it.
Okay.
So
you still just have the two hats?
I still just have the two hats.
You don't have a closet at home full of hats?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. Just the two.
Well, I was interested in your background. You got this really cool millennial job, right, at Yum Brands?
Yes, I do.
Responding to people that say bad things about Yum on the internet.
Nobody ever says bad things about Yum on the internet. But no, I work for Yum Brands PR team. I run all of our social channels. I come up with the social strategy. I run our newsroom content strategy. And I basically partner with our team to capitalize on any sort of proactive PR announcements.
Okay. And so when your mom is asked what you do, she says, oh, she goofs off on the internet all day.
Literally, I think that what she would say would be internet. Jessica does internet.
I
think that's what she would say.
The interweb.
Yes.
Well, you have another interesting part of your world, and I understand you know these crazy guys that I do that do improv. So you're an actual performer.
I am.
Which is amazing that you're nervous about doing this interview, but you know, do that.
Rick, it's one-on-one. If you get me one-on-one, I'm either on or off. If you get a crowd in front of me, you know, the lights are blinding, I can do my thing.
Okay.
Yes, so I perform in a local improv group called Lung Farm. We perform every other Sunday at Kaiju in Germantown at 10 p.m. We actually have a show this Sunday, April 9th at 10 p.m. So I encourage
Sunday night at 10?
It's a very inconvenient time, but we have a pretty good turnout. So, you know, we're always looking for other gigs as well to partner with other people. Like you mentioned, the Louisville Improvisers. We partnered with them for the Louisville Improv Fest this year and last year and did a show with them at the Bardstown. So we're always looking to partner. We've worked with Improv Anonymous before, and they're great. They will open for us at our shows. We'll go to their shows. So that's a nice relationship as well. And it actually started out of our college improv group. I went to Hanover College and was in the campus improv group for 4 years.
Wow.
And the two of the other members who were in the group with me, we all ended up back in Louisville. And decided, like, we needed improv back in our lives. We decided to form a group.
Yeah.
And
what do you like about that? I mean, what's the attraction to improv?
I think the attraction is that you can literally be anyone you want to be or anything you want to be unapologetically. So okay. I think that's the big thing. Like, when you step on stage and you're creating a scene with someone, you don't have to be anyone specific. You don't have to be yourself. It's constantly different, and the teamwork behind it is really valuable as well. I love working with people in my improv group to come up with these ideas and to come up with these characters and to watch them play out over the course of a show.
All right. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, and I'm sure you're good at parties. Let's get back to Hats for Hope. When is it, and how can I get me a hat?
So, first of all, I think that you would look lovely. We actually do have hats for guys. Last year, we had about 2 tables of hats for guys. So, you may want to get there early. They may sell out pretty soon. But we do have hats for men as well. The event is April 20th. It's a Thursday, and it is at the Triple Crown Conference Center. Over in the industrial park, right off 64.
My neighborhood. Yes.
Yes. So it's April 20th. The event will last from 6 p.m. to 9:30. There will be a silent auction for hats. There will be a silent auction for all sorts of different gift packages. A lot of the times, they range from weekend getaways to sports packages to good whiskey lovers.
Hats.
It's not just hats, correct?
Okay.
There will be appetizers.
But how many hats will be sold there, you think?
Well, from our pick of hats this year, I don't know if we will be displaying all 400, but it'll probably be closer around 300, I believe.
Wow. Wow. What's the most expensive hat you've ever seen?
There was one last year that I think the retail price was around $800. And I don't know what it ended up selling for, but I do remember the price tag on it. And I'm no like derby hat connoisseur. I'm sure there are plenty of hats that are more expensive than $800, but for my budget, $800 is pretty pricey for a hat.
Yeah. Well, what's the other end? If I go to that event, what's the least I can walk out of there with a hat for?
You probably $30, I would say.
30? I could probably handle that.
So, and you know, and we typically organize them based on price. We'll have some, I don't want to say cheaper hats because they're not cheap, just more affordable hats with lower starting bids in one section of the room. And okay. then as you go across the room, you'll see that prices slowly start to increase. So there, you can walk away with a hat for $30.
Well, I've been around this a long time with the Derby. I'm very excited about the Derby this year, but I am always curious about women's clothing in that. Does somebody come here and get a hat and then go get the outfit to match it? Or do you already have your outfit Ooh. And you come find a hat that goes with your outfit?
I feel like it's personal preference. I know for me, I have always picked the dress first and then a hat to match because I feel like I have like a pretty normal sized head. So most hats look the same on my head as opposed to trying on different dresses. And if one doesn't have the right cut or it's not the right color, that's a bit trickier. So I feel like you have to find the perfect dress first, then you can match the hat.
That's the strategy.
That's my okay. strategy at least.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's good to know. And you're, what's your plans for Derby this year?
Currently, it
you're waiting for somebody to ask you to go to one of those expensive seats, right?
I do want those expensive seats. Currently, it is TBD. I'm an infield veteran, and I've been going since high school. So I've burned out a little bit in terms of being an infield goer.
Do you have like a consecutive derbies? List you said you didn't go last year, though.
I did not go last year.
Okay.
And I didn't. I went to Oaks the year before. I didn't go to the Derby 2 years ago. But I think my infield run was probably from 2007 to like 2012, maybe.
Oh, gee, that's nothing.
So
why don't you hear about the years I went? But that was back in the day. But anyway, got to wrap it up here, Jessica, and tell me again how people can find out about Hats for Hope.
So if you log on to our website, hatsforhopelouisville.org, you can read all about our organization. You can read about the event. There's a really nice letter from our chair, Ann Mudge. And we also have a link on the website where you can buy tickets. Tickets will be sold $30 in advance and $40 at the door. So we encourage everyone to get on our website and get their ticket now. We also have a link on our website to volunteer for the event if you're interested in being a table monitor or
awesome.
If you're interested in, you know, just coming and helping out. We have volunteer opportunities available as well.
All right. Well, I'm sure it's going to be a great event, like all kinds of Derby-related events are coming up around here. So, Jessica, good luck on Hats for Hope.
Thank you so much. It was so nice to be on with you, Rick.
I'm Steve Coombs, and each week, Rick Redding and I record a new episode of Eat, Drink, Talk. We'll fill you up and fill you in on what's happening in Louisville's thriving drinking and dining scene. We bring you food news, interviews, and our take on what's happening around town. Find us on iTunes and download Eat, Drink, Talk.
That was a lot of fun going over there to Cozare Charities offices and talking with Jessica. And really appreciate Stephanie Smith, who stepped in and helped out, helped make that happen. And it was a good time. And I'm sure that event's going to be great. Well, it is Wednesday afternoon when I'm recording this, and there are severe weather warnings out in our town. And I'm just continue to be amazed at the way this town reacts to weather. It used to be enough that a threat of snow would cause school officials to call off school or let kids out early. Well, today there's a threat of rain, which could possibly maybe include hail. Although I'm looking out my window at 6 o'clock, and this is the exact time the severe weather was forecast, and there is nothing happening. Now, it may actually happen. We may actually get this storm, and it may be threatening. But believe it or not, because of the threat of rain, school systems, at least a couple in Indiana, let their kids out of school early. What is this world coming to? Of course, the spring break here in Louisville, and so our kids aren't there. They were spared officials making a similar decision at JCPS, but I know I sound like an old guy, but golly, it's a threat. It's not even raining. It's a threat of rain, and they're letting kids out of school early. I saw on Wave 3's website that they also, a bunch of churches canceled services for tonight because of a threat of rain, of which is not commenced yet as I'm sitting here recording this show at the exact same time that the storm was forecast to be going on. So anyway, enough ranting about weather. Speaking of ranting, you know, an update for you on this situation with, you know, the basketball season ended the other night. North Carolina wins the national championship, and all is well with the world. But how seriously these people take their basketball, these Kentucky fans. I heard on the radio, I was listening to Drew Diener's show, and he had an interview with a reporter from Omaha. And Omaha is where John Higgins, the referee who was in charge of the Kentucky-North Carolina game, and I guess it was the Elite Eight, and North Carolina, of course, won and went on to the national championship. This official was bombarded. He owns a business in Omaha, and that business was getting so many calls from the 502 area code and Kentucky area codes. They had to block those numbers, and we're talking thousands. And just awful things that were done by Kentucky fans to retaliate to their judgment that this official had cost Kentucky the game, which is not really true. In fact, the official was judged to have done a good enough job that he was promoted to move on to go to the Final Four and referee a game there. I mean, this guy, by all of the accounts that I could find, by all the reports I could find, is a fine official, and in the Kentucky game did an adequate job. It may not have, you know, I'm not one to pass judgment on how good a job officials do, but Kentucky fans, apparently there's a part of the fan base that is looking for an excuse for that team not to have moved on past North Carolina. So anyway, it's just an ugly part of our world, I guess. And I don't know. You can get all over me if you like. I prefer Louisville in sports. It's not that big a deal. But you know, the other thing, I read a story about Kentucky fans. You remember Jared Lorenzen, the big fat quarterback that played for UK for several years? He's a pretty good quarterback. He started a T-shirt company, and they're selling T-shirts that say "Make Kentucky Great Again, Build a Wall." The wall being around Louisville. So, you know, it appeals to that Kentucky base of people in rural areas that are big Trump fans and they hate Louisville. So, you know, judge however you like, but, and these people are making fools of themselves, I think. And if you're wearing one of those silly T-shirts, gee, I haven't seen one out in public. So, you know, I'm sure they're plentiful around Lexington. They gotta be. All right, well, on to brighter things. I had a very good week this week. Got to go to a new restaurant as part of my duties for Eat Drink Talk, and you can read the story about Parlor on eatdrinktalk.net. But it is right at the base on the other end of the Big Four walking bridge. It's a beautiful little area where you can walk right off the bridge, right into the restaurant. And the restaurant has a outdoor beer garden. It has a outdoor bar, has indoor seating. It has a balcony. It's a great view up there. And I just think it's a winner for Jeffersonville. Boy, what a difference. What a difference that walking bridge has made to Jeffersonville. I would say more of a difference than it's made for Louisville. There are several restaurants around that area of the walking bridge. And the people behind the Parlor also did a place called the Portage House, which is right around the corner, a very successful restaurant. So, you know, as much as I complain about going to Indiana occasionally, this is really good. This is a pizza place, but certainly have an elaborate bar. And I tell you, they had something at the bar I'd never seen before. They had Jack Daniels on tap. That's right. They pressurize and can serve alcohol on tap. So they have, you know, just like beer taps behind the bar, they have them for spirits. So they have vodka and bourbon and whiskey and all that stuff there. It's a great place. I encourage you to go to eatdrinktalk.net and read my piece on that. There's some good stuff there. Speaking of over there, speaking of eating and drinking and tourist attractions and cool places to go, I also got the chance to go to Copper and Kings this week. As you may know, I rent my house through Airbnb occasionally, and Copper and Kings reached out to Airbnb owners to talk about a special program they're having, some incentives. They want the guests that come to town to go to Copper and Kings, go for a distillery tour. Those tours are like a $15 value, and so they gave me tickets to give to my guests as they come in and enjoy touristy things in Louisville, and maybe they'll choose Copper and Kings. It is an outstanding venue. If you've never been over there, if you've never been inside there, it's an amazing place. They're also a sponsor of our Eat Drink Talk show, and I really enjoyed hearing about the program that they put together for that Copper and Kings has put together for Airbnb hosts like me. So anyway, that's going on. I got some guests coming in this weekend. They may be the first to enjoy that sort of that little free ticket to a distillery tour. So if you are interested in any of that, get in touch with me, and I'll tell you all about it. All right, so a lot going on in Louisville. I'm really having a good time doing this show and the Eat Drink Talk show. This week on Eat Drink Talk, I have an interview with the Ladies of the Morning. That's the two ladies who run the High Five Donut Shop down on where is that? That's down on Main Street. It's a fun place. And I know I had Annie's father, Dr. Lyle Sussman, on the show before, and so then I had the ladies on next week. It's a fun interview. I encourage you to tune into that one. All right, well, let's move on to our next guest. It's Steve Weiser, and I've known Steve for several years, played golf with him, and certainly interested in his books and his writings. He knows more about architecture than anyone in Louisville, and he has a new presentation that he's giving. Well, depending on when you listen to this, but it's being given Thursday in a speaker series sponsored by Dr. John Gilderblum. And Steve has given this new talk about missing opportunities, he's called it, things that Louisville could have done to make itself even greater than it is. And I think it's an interesting perspective if you really take time and think about things that did happen and didn't happen in terms of buildings and projects in our fair city. So that's what this interview with Steve Weiser about. I hope you'll tune in and listen in, and I'll be back to wrap up the show right after that.
Hey, I'm Dan Vonderhyde.
I'm Stephanie White.
We host a weekly podcast called
40-ish.
It's a show about life at middle age.
I'm not 40 yet.
Well, you're getting there eventually.
I guess.
So each week we talk about something that applies to the life of a middle-aged person. We drop a little bit of wisdom in every episode, and we go out and talk to people about their experiences.
And we laugh.
And we laugh a lot. It comes out every Tuesday. Make sure you download.
Tune in.
All right, and I am at the Comfy Cow with Steve Weiser, watching the world go by. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rusty, and I think I was on it one previous time a couple of years ago.
You're a rare breed, somebody that's been on more than once, but I was certainly interested when I heard about this new presentation you're doing. It's called Missing Opportunity, and I'm looking at the headline here, Housing Decline in West Louisville.
Yeah.
A lot of different projects around town, you've noticed that you talk about some that weren't built.
Right.
Tell me about some of those.
Yeah, and the title of the talk is Missing Opportunities, How Lost and Unbuilt Projects Could Possibly Make Louisville Great Again. Sorry, I have to use that phrase, make Louisville great again. It gets people's attention. But essentially, these were projects that were proposed for Louisville that were never implemented, or buildings that were actually built but have since been demolished. Okay. So these are missing elements that possibly could still exist here in Louisville, and that's one reason why I put the great again, because maybe revive some of these thoughts or concepts for the city that could help improve it.
Yeah. I just think back, the main one you hear about because it was such a spectacular design was the Museum Plaza.
Yes.
What's your thoughts about what would have happened if it had been actually
built? Oh, my
built?
Gosh. Well, number one, it was a world-class design. It gained a lot of attention around the world and would have been a spectacular showcase there on our waterfront. Believe it or not, elements of that building have been built elsewhere in the world in the past 10 years when that was proposed a number of years ago. So Museum Plaza was a cutting-edge design, very avant-garde, if you will. It would have really kept Louisville on the map. We are still on the map somewhat, but, you know, when the Humana building was built back in the mid-1980s, garnered a lot of attention. Museum Plaza would have done the same thing and really made our city, you know, definitely one to visit and to look up to as far as innovation is concerned.
Okay. Well, that's one that never happened. Let me ask your opinion of one that is happening right now. Every time I drive by, they're putting another story up on the Omni.
Yes. Well, Omni, thank goodness it's succeeding and going up. But prior to the Omni, there were several other development proposals for that location. For instance, the Cordish Company, which previously had owned that location and proposed several, it was called City Center developments there, which never happened. And prior to that was the Yum Arena was supposed to go at that location. So there were several developments proposed there, never implemented. But finally, Omni came along, and I'm glad. It's a great site for that location. And so, yes, that was an unbuilt site, but they are now building on it. So definitely one that's no longer missing, if you will.
There you go. Well, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about your presentation. But first, I want to, I guess, congratulate you. You've recently been named to an exclusive group of architects that are fellows, and maybe explain what that means.
Yeah, thank you very much, Rick. Yes, and that's one reason why I'm doing my talk. My good friend, John Gilderblum, asked me to talk at U of L due to me being selected as a fellow of the American Institute of Architects. It's a very select group of architects. Only 3% of the architects in the United States are fellows of the American Institute of Architects, and it's basically for career achievements. For the past 30 or so years, some of your listeners may know that I've been very active, very vocal on a variety of matters, preservation and planning and other things like the Louisville clock. And the AIA has noticed that and are recognizing me for being a leader in the Louisville community for my design efforts.
I mean, I know you not as the guy who designs buildings and architect, but you've written all these books about the architecture in
Louisville,
various parts of the city.
Yeah, I've written over 12 books, believe it or not. A lot of these are the houses of Louisville books, the historic houses, modern houses, carriage houses, ghost houses. But I've also written Louisville Sights to See by Design, which was a guidebook, and Louisville Tapestry. But I've written a lot of architecture and history books on the city. And so, yeah, I've kept up with what's happening, and I'm thankful and appreciative of the AIA for recognize me in this manner.
Well, I know a lot of people love your books and the fantastic pictures of things that were once one way and are no longer. And I guess that's a lot of what your talk about missing opportunities is old structures that maybe got torn down.
Yeah, a good example of that is the old post office building there at 4th and Chestnut. Just a grand old I mean, if it still existed, we'd all still look at it and just in awe. It's a spectacular building. It was unfortunately demolished back in the 1940s and replaced by Walgreens drugstore.
Oh.
And that is currently abandoned right now. That old post office was built to last centuries, and yet it didn't last more than, 50, 60 years?
Yeah.
That Walgreens drugstore didn't last more than 50 years itself. So, yeah, you know, very unfortunate. So some of my talk is going to be on lessons learned. Instead of looking short-term on some of these properties, let's have a longer-term vision of what they could be. Maybe repurpose some of these, like Louisville Gardens is another good example.
Well, I was interested. You were talking to me about Louisville Gardens. I've got great memories of that place, and it's just nothing's happening over there now.
Yeah, west.
But maybe there's something coming, right?
Yeah, west of 5th in downtown Louisville is kind of a vacant no man's land. A lot of surface parking lots, and the Louisville Gardens is sitting there vacant. So how can it be an anchor to better energize development on that part of downtown? And I've come up with a concept that we could repurpose Louisville Gardens, and I've actually had several developers contact me on it. I will be mentioning this in my talk. It's kind of difficult to explain over the radio of how it would be done. But so that would serve as an anchor to encourage development west of 5th Street and fill up a lot of those vacant lots.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that Louisville Gardens, I know there was a proposal also about Cordish, I guess, a few years ago to make some use of that space, but unfortunately, nothing's happened, and it's a big empty building.
And part of it is it's a huge building. It's 200,000 square feet. Phenomenal. So what can you do with that? And so if we can do some innovation and creative ways of looking at that building, I think a developer can repurpose it, and we've got some ways of doing that. So
okay.
Hopefully that will no longer be a missing opportunity.
Well, I was going to ask you about, in your career, you have all these great ideas, or you suggest ideas, and you put them out there in the world.
Right.
And I guess you're looking for developers to put the money behind them, right?
That, but I've also been very fortunate to be a part of some of these great visions to be implemented, like the waterfront. I've been on the waterfront design review committee since 1987 when the waterfront began. 30 years I've been on that committee, and we're still implementing projects down there, so I've actually been part of that. I was on the 21st Century Parks Steering Committee. 21st Century Park is just a phenomenal development. Hopefully a lot of your listeners have been out there to that. So I was integral into that process. So, yeah, even though I advocate some of this, I do get my hands dirty to implement them as well.
Well, here's one that I haven't thought about lately, but I know is on the drawing board. The extension of Waterfront Park to the west.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with that?
Okay. It's being proposed, and one of my missing opportunities are streetcars. And I see a great opportunity to put a streetcar line or some sort of tramway towards western part of Waterfront that would connect Russell and Portland along the waterfront back into downtown with some sort of a connector, whether that's a streetcar or some sort of vehicle. But very similar to it, some of your listeners may be familiar with the High Line up in New York City. Phenomenal development that repurposed an old railroad line and is now one of the signature attractions in New York City. We have an old railroad access way along the waterfront that we could do a similar thing to with this tramway, as I call it. And so, yes, that would help energize this western waterfront development.
Yeah. Well, that would be very exciting. Tell us a little more about your, about your talk. And you talk about whether Louisville is a great place to live, or is it falling short of what it could be?
Well, fortunately, we are always rated highly quality place in which to live. I have the newspaper clippings to back me up on this. But we can be so much greater, I guess, so much better, and we just need to take advantage of more. For instance, there was a survey that came out in December of this past year noting the five things that people come to Louisville to see.
Right.
And one of them was dealt with museums, they dealt with historic places, they dealt with obviously the bourbon industry and all, but of the five top items, three were based on historic sites. Oh, another one is fine dining. So all of our fine dining, museums, and historic sites are heritage-oriented things. So we have a great preservation and history presence here in the community, and I don't think we're really capitalizing on those. So part of my spiel is, hey, let's pay more attention to why visitors are coming here and promote those things and build our activities and our attractions around those.
Well, let me ask you a question we didn't really prepare for, but when you're talking about people coming into town, and I drive around downtown all the time and see this big teardown of the convention center and what they're putting back there. I mean, is that ultimately going to be a great thing for the city?
Well, it is. It's going to be more functionally and operationally, but this is another missing opportunity. Back when they built the original convention center, it was sort of like a fortress. If you recall what the original one was back in the 1970s, all concrete, no glass whatsoever. It was a bunker, basically, is what they built in downtown Louisville. No glass whatsoever. Well, there was a historic facade there called the Tyler Block. It was one building, but when you looked at it from the exterior, it looked like multiple buildings. It was designed in a manner that looked like a lot of streetscape, but it wasn't. It was one big building. Why couldn't we have saved that facade and put it on that convention center back in the 1970s? And it would have been a phenomenal, innovative design. But instead, no, what do? They tear it all down, put this bunker down there. Now what are they doing? They're ripping the bunker out and putting something in that has more glass and more openness, which we had back in the 1970s with the Tyler Block. So it was a missing opportunity. We're kind of going back now and recapturing it. But again, it was a very short-term mentality that they had in the 1970s.
Okay. Last project in the city I want to ask you about, because my mind is going to architecture and what's going on architecturally in Louisville. Whiskey Row. A lot of progress going on down there, and apparently it's not too long they're going to have like buildings there.
Well, Whiskey Row is a great example of a missing opportunity. Back in the 60s and 70s, they want to bulldoze all that down. Thank goodness it's still there, and we're able to repurpose it into museums and bourbon attractions. Who would have thought that bourbon attractions would have done what they've done? But, yes, Whiskey Row is phenomenal. You know, when visitors come into Louisville, they see West Main with all those cultural and museums. They're just excited by that. Likewise, now we're going to do it on East Main with Whiskey Row. We need to do more and more of that, of repurposing these buildings and not demolishing them, but taking advantage of them. We have folks come around in a week or so. I'm going to be hosting the National Trust for Historic Preservation. They're coming in town with a bunch of folks, and I'm giving them a tour around Louisville, and they love this stuff. And we as Louisvillians take it all for granted, and we want to tear it down. So that's part of my talk, and part of my spiel is, highlighting this and say, hey, folks, let's take a step back and think about this.
Oh, very good. Well, it's very informative. I know there's nobody in town who knows more about the architecture of the city than you, Steve Weiser. And so congratulations on your becoming a fellow, and thanks for being on the show again.
Hey, Rick, no problem, and let's get out and play some golf.
There you go.
All right, a big thank you to Steve. I hope his talk goes well. I'm sure he'll give it again, and if you keep your eyes and ears open, you can probably catch it somewhere. Steve does a lot of tours around town, does a lot of extracurricular activities in addition to being a great architect. So thanks again to Steve. Steve also suggested, and I don't think he was just trying to butter me up, that all these shows that I'm doing here on the Rusty Satellite Show create a great oral history of our city, at least in the last 4 years. It's a lot of prominent folks have been on the show, and so I guess I'm looking for ideas to use that in some productive way. I would welcome a phone call from you if you have an idea for that. But in the meantime, I'm going to wrap up the show here. I want to thank again my sponsors, Passport Health Plan, my friends at More Smiles, and my good buddies at the Eye Care Institute down in Butchertown. You can call them at 502-589-1500 to make an appointment. All right. Want to remind you that if you want to keep up with all the stuff I'm doing, it's best to look on Facebook. I post all the stories I do on eDrinkTalk.net and LouisvilleKY.com. The Pulse of the City is another project that I operate in addition to the Rusty Satellite Show here and eDrinkTalk, the podcast. So lots going on with me. There's a lot to keep up with in our fair city, and it's another day closer to Derby Day. So that is coming up. When it's April, it's a sure sign of spring. We have a lot of talk about the Kentucky Derby and things going on around it. So looking forward to that, spending another Derby season with you. And shortly after that, right after Derby, we'll have our 200th episode of the Rusty Satellite Show. Look forward to sharing all that with you. And thanks for all your feedback and for listening to the show each and every week. Until it's time for Rusty Satellite Show 197, this is Rick Redding, your host.
Thanks for listening to the Rusty Satellite Podcast with your host, Rick Redding. Next week, Rick will be right back here on Louisville.am with another stellar lineup of great guests. You can let Rick know what you think by sending an email to rick@louisvilleky.com. He's on Twitter, too, at Ricky Redding. For more information about the show, including photos of Rusty Satellite Show guests, go to LouisvilleKY.com, the pulse of the city.
Time I